You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host. This episode is brought to you by the good folks at Via Hemp Company. Have you ever taken a CBD product hoping that it would help relieve stress or help you sleep, but you were left disappointed? Well, Via Hemp Company is dedicated to crafting high-strength hemp products that you can actually feel. Get this, they even have a legal THC product that they can ship to your door in all 50 states. And let me say, it's about time. Everyone who is tuning into this podcast, whether you're a music lover, entrepreneur, or even a music producer yourself, you know that getting in a creative flow is one of the most important things that we do all day. There are a lot of factors that make an amazing musician, and sometimes we could use that extra push to get into the right mindset. These guys have crafted products to promote specific effects, such as sleep, pain relief, and even energy. Whether you want gummies, topicals, vapes, or drops, they got you. So head over to their site and improve your daily routine with Via Hemp Company. Visit viahemp.com and use code BB15 for 15% off your first order. That's viahemp.com.
Bedroom Beethoven.
Welcome, people of Earth, to episode 158 of the podcast. I told her I saw it all in a dream. My guest this week is...
My name is Jerry. I go by Haji. Apparently, I'm known for making music. Well, I'm a founder of Odd Future, and just here now. The sun is out. It's really nice. I'm rolling a cigarette.
I'm writing rhymes, these are fighting lines. All goddess lines, just abide by minds. All divide the times we've shared. And you're a prime with time, with the war that you declared. And we share it together like any clear. Cause I just wanna be fair, and you just wanna be here. I don't understand it, I'm anger managed. I fucking panic, you stress me to the point I'm frantic. Sirens, ambulances, emotional imbalances. Beautiful ballerina dances as I spin her body like a dreidel. She asked me if I love her, I told her keep her under the table. She only if I'm able, on and off like bad cable. And this is not a fable, this is somewhere I've been. A wishing well, me send cinnamon in my pen.
In the time since his last album, the original founding member of Odd Future has focused on his personal life, include going to recovery for addiction, focusing on his mental health, and moving from Los Angeles to Toronto. As Haji describes it, the new project has an almost bipolar feel to it, like he's two different artists, one the rapper and then one the singer. And in this candid conversation, we chat about the contrast between being raised in Los Angeles and life now in Toronto. June 7th, 2020, that is the day that he found his sobriety and the new era of Jerry Long Haji began. Before we get into the episode, just want to remind everyone that supports or digs the podcast. It's available wherever it is that you get podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, patreon.com/bedroombeethovens. If you're so kind and generous as to give a buck or two to the show monthly, in return, I shout you out. You could talk to me directly and you get content early, which means this conversation could have been heard by you 100 hours earlier. So with all that knowledge transferred to you, let's get on with the real reason you're here. 158. Bedroom Beethovens, and the man of the hour, Haji. Yeah, I've been trying to reach out since February, so I'm very grateful.
It's not that I don't like. I mean, it's like preferences. Why do we have them? I guess I just wasn't in a space to speak to anyone. Say that.
Okay, well, that's fair enough, and I just want to, you know, say congrats on the Everyday video because it crossed 100,000 views, and I think it's cool that you, whether you've your headspace is in the music, whether it is or not, but you could take a few years off, and then when you come back, it's almost like you never left. You know, the love and the fans, they might be there waiting to embrace you through the name changes, the relocations, and all that.
Yes, you know, nowadays I find consistency the key to like life in general, as far as like a routine. You know, I finally have a routine that works for me in my life, and music is incorporated in that. But you know, as far as work and stuff, like, yeah, there has to be a routine and some rhythm of consistency in order for it to reach and surpass the core base of the fans that, you know, are present today, which I'm totally grateful for. I just acknowledge, you know, where I am in this experience currently.
Yeah, I think routine and consistency can be two different things, though, because if you go on the internet, it's like, well, what has Haji been up to since his beef with Tyler? Do they reconcile? Is he still friends with Mike G, Frank? You know, does he hang out? Does he only hang out with Left Brain now? Does he even rap anymore? All of his social media accounts are dead. He hasn't had a song since 2019. Anyone got any news? Like, you have to constantly update people on your life, and the demand for that, it has to be kind of daunting.
I mean, it's a choice, right? Beef with Tyler. I more so have beef with myself, and I just projected it. So I never actually had a real problem with T. Like, just I don't even know what I'm saying, but that's just for like, it's just on record. Like, I've never had a problem with really anyone. The problem that I had was myself. And I found myself and other people, and I didn't like myself for that. Like, it's like it's crazy, you know what I mean? But like, as far as you know, keeping people updated and shit. Personally, like, I don't know. I don't find myself that involved with myself to where I feel the need to like let people know what I'm doing. Like, it's like, I don't know. You put down your phone and then, you know, like real life has to take place. You know what I'm saying? And even if you are on your phone, that shit is still taking place. So like, for me, you know, I don't know. I'll be in studios and fucking hanging with my kids and, you know, in nature and fucking in therapy. And I just be like living real life. I travel, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's kind of cool to be able to, for me at least, you know, in my experience, to be able to just walk around. And it's not like it's not like I'm 22 again where, you know, like I'm being noticed everywhere and stopped and, you know, I could just like freely walk around. And
is that the kind of stuff that stopped you from doing a better job of living in the moment when you were like 19, 20, 21, 22? Is just like, you know, touring was adventurous, coming out with albums was like more of a dream realized, and people were coming up to you all the time. So it was kind of hard to appreciate those moments at a realistic pace.
I'm not even sure if, you know, me and my friends like wanted fame. You know, I think to a certain extent we all had like this dream, and it was a synchronicity of all just like doing something with our lives together for sure. And you know, that shit just happened to happen. Like, and I don't know, I was like, you know, at the time, like, I was homeless from 16 to 20. I was sleeping on people's couches, and like sometimes I walk around in parks or walk around all night until school started again. Like, I graduated high school homeless. So the only reason that got, like, what got me out of being homeless and homelessness was my friends and I getting signed at the age 20. So, like, all of it was a shock. And my suffering that happened prior to the signing was basically my reaction publicly. I was fucking wilding. And I had a fun time doing it, but it's like, it wasn't the essence of who I truly am. That became a part of me that was inauthentic to my true self. So, I mean, a lot of it was a blur. Like, I found, you know, who it is that I am today, 2 years ago. That's when, like, it really began. So I'm 31 now. So it was like I was 29.
So the pandemic, when the pandemic started, I guess, kind of gave way to that. Or was that just timing? It just happened to line up that way.
Yeah, it just lined up. Like, I mean, like, I think that, you know, niggas be like, oh, when the stars align, da-da, blah-blah. You know, I believe that the stars, you know, they do align on some cosmic level and in some form and in some parallel quantum universe. But, like, I feel like we have to align with the stars, which is our path. You know what I mean? It's always, the universe is always in alignment. We have to align with the shit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, I was thinking is just like, you know, you were introduced to weed at 12. And at such an early age, maybe that was fucked up. If you would have started smoking at 22 instead of 12, it wouldn't have been so impactful. So I was thinking about timing, you know, because if anything, boredom is kryptonite for any addict or former addict. And the pandemic, I was thinking, must have came at the absolute worst time for you, but you ended up, you turned into like a really good time for you. You know, you must have stayed busy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, smoking weed at 12, was it out of boredom? Like, man, or was it even my choice? Like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, back then, I don't even think, you know, a lot of things that happened in life, you know, that, you know, trauma, whatever, like, it wasn't my choice. Or, you know, to reframe, it's like, I didn't have control over my life, and to an extent, I still don't. Like, no one does, right? You know, destiny is... Our destiny is by an unforeseen hand. I don't know. I forget what movie it was that I seen that it had said that, but it struck me. Like, I was just like, damn, that shit is true. Cause it's true. At least, like, I agree with it. I can't say it's true, but I agree with it. So in my experience, like, yeah, it's true to me. But, yeah, shit. I mean, I was introduced to seeing my auntie smoke fucking crack and pick up heroin and get, you know what I mean? At a very young age, I had no control over that. So when I look back at that experience or something like that, it's like, you know, if you don't handle the things that happened in your past, it'll just keep coming up until you deal with the shit. It'll keep coming in different forms, the relationships you have with your girlfriend, your boyfriend, the relationships that you have with the people that you work with. Like, the opportunity will always present itself in a different form until you deal with the shit. And that's just what it is. I was running from something that I needed to deal with. And now that it's addressed, I can move forward in my life as a person that I am today. And this is what a lot of people don't realize. They're too busy fucking working or going to school or doing some shit that really is not that important. It's that surface level shit. And they wonder why they hate their boss. Because it reminds you of your fucking mom when she fucked you up. And honestly, it's like, you know, it's all just like, why do we get annoyed about certain things? You know, the word, quote unquote, triggered. Like, it's deep. Like, most of this shit comes from shit that I honestly don't belong to us today. It belongs to our the generations that came before us.
Interesting observation I made was your mom wasn't an addict. Your dad was. So she made a choice. And she, you don't really see that too often where you have one mom who's not an addict who's married to one who is. So she has to kind of deal with that contrast. And you had to deal with that contrast. So that must have been, you know, powerful, confusing, chaotic. And you had to deal with that later in life too. So that's pretty interesting you put it that way.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. I come from a line of, you know, drug addicts. Niggas that got mental illness on both sides of the family. My mom necessarily didn't have to be a drug addict, but she was addicted to something. And I say that, I don't say that in a space of like, you know, dumping her business or anything like that, because, you know, I love my mama regardless. I'm using my mom as an example to, you know, I'm speaking about everyone, myself first, but I'm speaking about everyone. So if I'm talking about my mom, I'm talking about me in some form too. I'm talking about you too. Because as a collective of consciousness, all of us in this earth, like money, big whips, jewelry, a lot of pussy, or not, we're all going through this, the same thing. All that shit I just named, drugs, that's all surface level. When you go deeper into the soul, I don't know why I'm saying this to you, but you'll find it. And that's just where I'm at in life. Like, I'm just rediscovering. I'm actually finding the truth. I am the truth in today's time. Back then, I wasn't.
And when we refer to back then, so like People Change was recorded years ago before the pandemic, before this clarity. So one line of the lyrics was, "My favorite part of today is when today is over." And those 10 words say a lot. That's heavy.
Yeah. Favorite thing about today, day is over. I mean, yeah. This shit was, just one of those things where you just wait for the calm, like, and you know, normally the calm is when you could lay your head down and go to sleep, but like here's the thing, the day is over for me at that time meant like 5-6 in the morning, because I work all night.
Well, then when you were experiencing insomnia and all that in the late hours, you said you would paint or write poems. Did any of those produce some surprising results? Like maybe some of those poems turn into lyrics that you used in a song?
No. They're actually kept in a vault for now, and they will be released later in a book. The paintings as well.
Very cool. And it was around this time maybe that you felt Los Angeles wasn't serving you anymore. Like, what brought it might seem kind of obvious on the surface, but maybe there was a deeper meaning on what brought the move to Toronto.
I got family up here. I have kids. They're, one of them's Canadian. It's just like, you know, it was crazy because as soon as I got out of rehab, I was supposed to, they recommended 90 days. I stayed for 30. Afterwards, you know, you're supposed to go to a halfway, what is it called?
The halfway house?
Not halfway, but like a fucking rehabilitation home or whatever. You're supposed to live there for a bit. I didn't do any of that. I recovered off of drugs, straight drop, no medication, no nothing. I just cold turkey. And I don't know. I recovered quite quickly. But yeah, I moved up here right after. So this was pretty much like the home that I rehabilitated in. Instead of going to a home where there's other motherfuckers sleeping and shit. Like, and it was very, I'm not gonna lie to you, man. That shit was, it was very difficult. It was very difficult to do because I did it alone. But, you know, it also, you know, did the opposite and gave me a lot of strength. You know, I feel like the things that we find negative or the things that hurt us, like, if we lean into all that pain and the suffering, if we lean into it and there's meaning in that, like there's healing in that, like there's love in that pain, like a lot of it. And that's the shit that people run away from. So they're afraid, myself included, at a time in life, afraid of being vulnerable, afraid of showing people that you cry, afraid of showing people that you care. So it comes out in other ways. Niggas work very hard. They get a lot of attention, a lot of dopamine release. Niggas are addicts. Like, it's like, you know, niggas lead their kids. You know, it's like, I don't know, we could go on about it. I don't know. I'm into like really facing everything that I need to before my life is over. My life. Before life is over. Before I leave my body permanently and my energy is taken elsewhere.
Yeah, you called it though. A decade ago you said television, news, the fucking food that we consume, everything is a setup. I'm starting to travel and see the world, and you can tell that America does not even love their people. I'm gonna move out of America. I don't give a fuck. You did.
Where did I say that at? That's crazy.
That sentence is even true, even as recent as a few days ago, when we have $40 billion to send to another country, but no baby formula for babies in this country. So people are going to feel like paying taxes in this country doesn't make citizens a top priority. You nailed it 10 years ago. Every day I'm on my grind, like a skateboarder. I'm a G, I'm on my grind, like a shaved orange.
That shit came through me, I feel. And it's just like, even in like music, like I say things that I don't understand in a moment, but I, you know, it's like I leave traces for myself in sonically. And then like, I made records like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and I play them today, and I'm like, whoa, that was for today. Like, I didn't even, this is crazy. It'd be like spot on. So I know, like, for me, it's not about, like, you know, apparently niggas got to make money. It's not that, you know, it's not even really a thought in my brain, though. Like, the money part is more so, or the fame, or the, you know, there's something that I need to get out of creating. Because whether it's music or, you know, some people make clothes and some people make cars and some people make nothing. But the person that makes nothing is creating more for themselves that they even realize they're doing. You know what I mean? Everyone here on earth is a creator of something.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think being a creator in Los Angeles versus, you know, being in Toronto, it's just a lot better. You know, I think you can, when you have that clarity, it matches your pace. They really respect your privacy. You know, if you're caught seen with a woman that sells 40 million records, the paparazzi in America would be relentless. The tabloids would be relentless. And I guess that's a testament to Canada. You know, it's more relaxed. It's a better environment. This move is responsible for Cam Hunter and you connecting. I'm assuming Aaron A. or Jennifer Botchwall, who's a documentary filmmaker. You know, Andrew Beach, who's a bit younger but equally as talented. Like, you got all these great Canadian talents and surround yourself with a really, really great team up there.
If you live pure enough, it'll find you. And I'm wanting to just keep moving regardless. Like, I personally, I've never looked up to anyone. I'm not a fan of anything. I say I have moments. I find inspiration in things. There are things that I can say that I like. I find enjoyment. But there is nothing that I identify on this earth as God unless it is an experience. So it's like, yeah, you know, working with all these people, man, like, that's an experience. Like, for, you know, a woman with 40 million records, like, that's an experience. You know, there's God in that. There's truth somewhere in that shit. Like, you know what I mean? There's God in our, you know, everyone's body, but we have a little bit of everything in everything. There's a little bit of everything in everyone. Evil, narcissism, you know, poison, and, you know, the opposite of all that shit we feel and think is bad. I mean, overconsumption of anything is perceived as bad and, you know, it'll kill you or, what, you know, harm you, you know, but it's like, a little bit of everything at different times can ultimately help you, you know? So, you know, I've been, it's really, for me, I've been reframing my perception on what it is that we've been, what we've been, you know, a trained to think. And, you know, what is that word I'm looking for?
It almost sounds like you're saying that we have to, like, unlearn things in order to move forward, like the unlearning.
Pretty much. I mean, I stopped paying attention to hella shit, like, to where it's like, I actually, it's like the beginner's mind. I, like, really have that. I handle a lot of situations accordingly, and I choose to observe more than experience in a lot of circumstances.
So if you're, like, if you're taking that way of thinking and you're back in album mode, are you going to revisit the idea you had when you had a project called Damien?
No.
That's over and done.
Yeah. Yeah, Damien was done as far as, like, the album, but it was just the wrong vibration. It wasn't time. I would never revisit. No, that time has came and gone. I forgot about that.
Fair enough, man. So, but this new music, you got Jeff from the Gorillaz attached to it. But that's a formula that worked, right? How did that come about?
Honestly, your good old internet. He hollered at me on my, you know, he hit me on my page. And, you know, it's crazy because, you know, at the time, like, when we made the record and stuff, we never met, you know. But yeah, that's my bro for sure. Synchronicity, like, he for sure is, like, you know, good dude, searching, sober. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? And you know, musically intact, I'd say.
Yeah, when I hear that he's the lead guitarist for the Gorillaz, I don't know why, but I picture, like, a 50-year-old guy, because I feel like the Gorillaz have been around forever. But he's only 2 years older than you. It's crazy.
Yeah, Jeff is cool, man. his little mullet and shit. That nigga tight. Don't give a fuck.
I love. They're about to go on tour though, man.
They are on tour with Damien, I believe. I think they're already, yeah, they're already traveling and stuff.
Yeah, I think, Earth Gang is with them and all that. It would have been cool, man. And it would have made sense, too, if, I don't know if your headspace is ready for tours or if you're prepared to move around as much, but that would have been really cool if you would have joined them.
Yeah, I'm in preparation as far as, like, touring goes. Like, I have kids. I care about that shit more than I give a fuck about touring. Like, for me, I don't know, I do spot dates and stuff. But to be on a road and to be away from, like, what I love, I'd say, the most, what I am accountable for, my children. Like, my dad did when I was 5, bro. Like, I'm breaking a generational pattern here. His dad left him, you know what I mean? His dad had him smoking cocaine at fucking 9 years old. So, and I'm talking about my father. So, it's like, you know, we can only do but so much here on earth. Like, we're not here that long. You know what I mean? It's not like niggas is, like, broke and has to work a regular job or whatever. And if I did, I'd do that shit. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I don't know. For me, there really is not much ego left. I can say that there will always be. But it's about, like, quieting the noise.
Yeah. Well, if you're no longer doing music to feed an ego, you still have to make music with an obligation to reach a level of success so you can feed your kids and provide a good life. So the industry, you can never be 100% free, right?
I feel like my kids aren't even mine. Like, they have their own lives. Like, they, you know, my son is 10, like, soon to be 11, you know what I mean? It's like, that little nigga has his own life, like, his own path with God and himself that have truly nothing to do with me. Sometimes I even question, like, so what am I doing here? You know what I mean? But I realize that that is between me and God. Like, it's crazy. Like, I don't know. I'll be in places, like, I'll be in places, and I find the answers through keeping consistent. So it's like, yeah, man, I, you know, niggas do got to put food on the table, da-da-da, blah-blah-blah, you know. But it's like, there's bond accounts. My money's put away. That shit makes money. Like, you know, I truly am in love with, like, the moment. Like, I'm practicing every day not to allow thought to take me out of the moment that I'm in now. And that's what, you know, I find a lot of people struggle with. Like, it's like, for an example, I came across some shorty, right? She was white. I hop out of my car, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go get a bubble tea, right? She, like, staring at me, whatever. I start walking towards her because that's where the bubble tea place was. She grabbed her purse all scared. I just walked by her, you know what I mean? It's just like, I know this bitch listens to rap music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know she's a rap fan. Rap is number one in the fucking world. But you see a nigga walk down the street in broad daylight, you clutching your purse. Like, it's, I don't know, you know? I don't know, you know? I just don't know. And sometimes, most of the time, I don't need to. For who? Me? Or my ego? I just watched it happen. But if I wanted to experience it, it would have affected me, like, deeply. Why does she do that to me? Why is this happening to me? I don't, you know. I think it just happened to happen, you know.
But I mean, any black dude that would have been in your situation would have had the same outcome. So it wasn't so much it happened to you. It would have happened to any black dude in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, and what does that do to our, you know, our black men in our community? It'll probably make a nigga want to take the fucking purse. Like, hold up. You know what I mean? It's offensive.
It reminds me of that scene in Crash. Remember with Sandra Bullock where she says if she's walking down the sidewalk and she clutches her purse, she's a racist. Ooh. But if she walks by them and it gets mugged, then she's asking for it. Yeah. So she was framing it like it's a lose-lose as a white woman in America.
technically it's a lose-lose for everyone, because America and people don't protect themselves or people, but they attempt to. And how do they do that? Through fear and control. So she was controlling the situation by experiencing it, choosing, so unconsciously choosing to experience it instead of watch it. If she was to just observe, she would have just saw a nigga walk into the store, get his bubble tea and dip and not even look at her. But she, her ego needed her to be seen.
Well, I got to say though, you know, even if you say that your 10-year-old son has, you know, at sometimes it seems like he has a separate life, whatever you're doing, you're breaking the cycle successfully. And you seem to be in the best headspace than you've ever been. And you're thinking long term, even though you're taking it day by day. I got to say, it's inspiring to hear. And, you know, I think it translates into the music where you're putting out. And you say you're disconnected, but I feel like you're also putting out some of the best music you're doing.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the album is done. And I feel great about it. And I'm looking forward to the next, what comes next, you know, the unexpected. And I'm okay with that shit. Like, I don't know. That's why it's like this EP I did all by myself, you know. No team, no nothing. And it's just like, yeah. You know, I'm pretty proud of myself in the sense of like three children. And I'm around them every day. There's not like one day that truly goes by that I don't see them. You know, so it's like I am successful. I'm rich. Maybe in a monetary sense, but I mean, like, in a sense of, like, family, man. Like, these people that are around me actually know me and love me for who I am. And I find that the most important.
All my rivals on arrival, bullet spiral, auto rifle, homicidal. Watch what I do, mellow hype you, ride a wave. I'm a title, not entitled to a title. Eyes closed, blindfold, spinning high codes. You like a type, rider, you're not the type to fuck with me. Only God can judge me. Money, cars, power, hoes, and the luxury.
Yeah, beautiful thing. And this EP is like almost the first project that they can kind of listen to. With a sense of maturity, because they're at a certain age.
Yeah, I remember Jay-Z saying something along the lines of, like, they got these youngins putting out shit at young ages when their minds are still developing. You know, if I'm not mistaken, he put out his first shit at, like, what, 29, 27? Something like that. Don't quote me, but it was somewhere around there. And it's just like, yeah, I believe in, you know, multiple lives in one body. And yeah, just that perspective keeps me optimistic.
I remember when you guys performed at Fallon, Questlove put in a call to Jay-Z, and Jay-Z said he met with you guys. Did you ever have one-on-one?
No. But we did meet at his house. He said Beyonce was there, but she never came out. So I don't know. But we had tacos, and it was pretty cool. Like, I had a moment, like, I was having a Corona at the infinity pool, looking at the view, and I remember I was sitting by myself for a minute, and Jay was like, look at this nigga, he having a moment. Everybody just started laughing. And it's just like, yeah, nigga, I'm having a moment. And once I leave, I'm gonna have another one. Like, you know? Like, these moments don't stop. Like, they just keep coming. And I'm inviting him at this point.
Was he just trying to talk to you guys, or was he trying to court you guys for a specific opportunity?
Yeah, he was trying to pick us up, put us on his Maybach bandwagon. And the opportunity was nice, you know. It's cool to also be the freedom of decision within opportunity.
Yeah, everything worked out as it should have.
I think so. I would say so. Yeah.
I want to give you the floor, man. Anything else that you wanted to say that we didn't cover that you feel needs to be said? Maybe a date for the album? Anything you want to say?
No, I don't have a date. Anything else I want to say? Shit. I'm about to go to the gym, dude. Like, you know what I mean?
I still vote trampoline, but you do what you want to do.
Yeah, probably later. That moment that moment has passed.
Well, I'm glad we're able to connect, man. Maybe now the internet will kind of leave you alone for a bit and you can just press play and enjoy the new EP. And I want to wish you more success for you and your fam and a beautiful summer.
Thanks, man. You too. What's your name?
I'm Cello, man. Thank you.